Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
You ready?
Ready.
Dave Libby here. We got Jeff Vicente in the house as well, running all of our tech stuff. Welcome to Contraband. He's the band of Sosra, and I get to cackle on there every now and then.
Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Contraband. I am Dave Libby, and my guest today is Chris Brother Latham of Bisto Blanco. He is the guitarist for that band, kick-ass band. Chris, how you doing?
Doing good, Davey. Thanks for having us part of the show.
Cool, man. Welcome to the show. I guess, you know, you just got off tour, right?
Yeah.
I mean, literally last night.
Yes.
Yesterday.
Just
whatever.
Got back. Yeah.
Cool. How'd that go?
It went great. We're on this, you got to love music, man. You know, you get paid to go on a boat to the Bahamas, to these really nice destinations. I mean, it's, and play music. It's like, I can't express how much of a blessing that is. So
you're really struggling.
Yeah. We were just, we went from in December, we are in, you know, -1 Fahrenheit all the way through December, probably even colder in some areas, traveling on a, you know, not too low budget, but it wasn't the greatest, to going on this Monsters of Rock cruise, which is just a mind-blowing experience, having a balcony in my room looking at the, you know, jungles of Haiti.
Nice.
No, it was a good trip, real productive. We had a real nice time, got to meet up with a bunch of folks. Nice. And wow. Rock out.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a good show. I've seen you guys a few times. So.
Yeah.
But that's not where you're from, is it?
That is not where I'm
you're
from.
You're from a place that's much colder.
Yes, I'm from Anchorage, Alaska. Or actually, let's just say Alaska, and I will say Anchorage because it is the nearest town that I lived in. Came from a town called Girdwood, which is about 40, maybe 50 miles outside of Anchorage. Little teeny town, but...
Small town boy in a big city.
Absolutely. It's like, what's that? One blast or one small grass. Whatever that saying is, you know, and in a big field, blah. Big fish in a small pond. How's that? Or a small fish in a really big pond.
Exactly. Well, so, yeah, tell us how you, what moved you out of Alaska and a little bit about your, you know, how you got into music and, you know, why and all that kind of good stuff.
Well, starting playing guitar in high school, I started playing because a couple of friends of mine were playing and they seemed to be getting all the chicks.
So
this was about the ladies originally.
Thank you, ladies, by the way.
But, you know, I finally found that, you know, most of us musicians, you know, at least if they take the, you know, they really are, taken by the instrument that they learn, you turn out to be pretty much a nerd because you spend most of your time in the bedroom rehearsing and playing new things. It's like getting a new toy. Yeah. And that's what it found, for me. You know, I learned the first song and I was like, oh my God, this is, may have been some really simple 3-chord song, but it was just really cool to me. And then I learned my first G major scale and I found that half the day has gone by and I'm working on this scale.
Yeah.
And then it turned from learning to a piece of another song and finding, oh man, I really like this guitar player. Started learning him. And the next thing I know, it's like my whole social life was with my instrument.
But you have the chicks.
No. I was playing the instrument now. That's why I say, probably, you know, a lot of great musicians spent most of the time just sitting in their bedroom or wherever, but by themselves learning and really being involved and one with that instrument.
Yeah. So you learned to play the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you took it to the next step of joining a band, right?
Yeah.
So how was that experience for you? I mean,
well, I'll.
And all this, you're still in Alaska, right?
Well,
that's where you picked up the guitar?
Right before, I was still in Alaska. And so there was a talent show, and it wasn't anything to win awards. They just had this talent show, and it was in the auditorium. And oddly enough, the auditorium that was from my high school was the biggest concert arena, which is not an arena, an auditorium, right, in the state of Alaska. So everybody that came up there to play at that time, with Ozzy Osbourne, Ted Nugent, Molly Hatchet, all these acts, they had to play my high school because that was the biggest auditorium in the whole state. So I played this talent show, and I just did a guitar solo. I didn't have anybody to play with because, you know, I just didn't. So I just played a guitar solo that I mishmashed some Yngwie stuff that I, you know, attempted to even try. and some other licks that I had learned from some guitar players that I really, really loved. And just to hear my friends and the people in that audience, which was about 2,000 people, just cheer me on. They all knew me, of course. You know, it wasn't like, you know, new fans or anything. That was the bug, I think. That was the bug to play live. I was like, wow, what a rush. Man, if I could bottle that adrenaline, man, music wouldn't have been my calling. I would have been the biggest, you know, adrenaline dealer in the world.
I get you. So that was successful. Mm-hmm. You got the bug. What after that?
So then I, you know, graduated and I wanted to take it further. I wanted to learn more music theory. I wanted to be a working guitar player. So I moved to California, moved to Los Angeles, went to school, went to college. And at the same point, after going to college for a couple years, I wanted to dedicate more of what I was learning to actually learning just music and not learning algebra and all these, you know, English and all these other things I was learning in a standard college. I went to a music school called Dick Grove School of Music, spent a year there and graduated from that, and just really brought me into, you know, the whole realm of how the chords that I'm playing and the things that we do and why they work with each other.
Yeah.
And why they don't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know why they don't. Just put a guitar in my hands. Well, cool. So what was your first band that you were in?
First band I was in was a band called Pandemonium, and it just happened to be that they were also an Alaskan band.
Oh, cool.
And there was... I lived in Sherman Oaks in an apartment building. I was living with my folks, and you know, you got to have repairs done. And one of the guys that was doing, most musicians have another job of some sort. And so one of the guys that was doing some of the maintenance around the building happened to be a singer of this band called Pandemonium, who happened to be signed to Metal Blade Records.
Oh, nice.
And they were looking for another guitar player. They already had it. They just wanted to add another guitar player for the record that they were putting out to be able to fill out the sound. And, there I was. Bam. So I just kind of fell into it. I learned the songs and jumped in and had a real good time with those guys. And, you know, I was in Alaska last year. I was playing the Hard Rock in Anchorage. And certain enough, there's my photo and the guitar from, you know, from that band, from Pandemonium. Because, you know, of course, not a whole lot of, you know, stuff comes out of Alaska. I mean, there's a lot of talented folks up there, but sometimes it just tends to stay within
A little bit isolated up there. Yeah. Cool. So you're in Pandemonium, right? And got some of your fix there from... touring, I suppose, with them, or just did shows up there?
Yeah, we just did. We are now in LA, so we just did local shows around here in LA with them. We got to play with some really good bands, though: Flotsam and Jetsam, King's X. You know, a lot of bands that I, you know, from after playing with them, I like dove in and it's like, man, these are really good things, bands, good musicians in these bands. And actually it helped me because I would now dive into what these guys were doing, especially King's X, man. You just listen to those guys. All three of them are crazy good.
Yeah.
Crazy good. And what they do to bring into their, you know, in their songwriting and what they, and you pick that apart, it's pretty amazing. So, so we did that locally here. And unfortunately, though, it was about the tail end of when the band kind of was, you know, fizzling out and the guys were ready to kind of do their own thing and kind of move on, you know. So we did that for a couple years and then, you know, everybody kind of went their own ways and had to jump into another couple projects. So it was just like doing local stuff around town, but also having to hold down a job of some sort as well.
Right.
And so I played with a couple other local bands and then later on started doing some stuff with Chuck Garrick. And we had like the first the first go around of Bisto, if you want to call it. And it was just him and I doing some songs, and it was a three piece. And we were just doing some local gigs and having a really good time about it. You know, same thing. Life kind of gets, not, I don't want to say gets in the way, but kind of takes you places. And so we did that for a little bit, and that kind of fizzled out, just to circle around, you know, 10 years later for us to get Bisto Blanco going again.
Right. And when did you guys establish Bisto Blanco?
2012.
Yep. Okay. Cool. And so when did you guys come out with your first record?
First record was the end of 2012, 2013.
And that was Live Fast, Die Loud,
right? Live
Fast,
Die Loud, yes.
Okay. Cool. And then you guys came out with a second record after that, correct?
Yes. Yeah, we came out with just titled Bisto Blanco, came out with the second one. It's been about a year, going on a year and a half now. And we just released a live record that we recorded in Berlin.
Oh, nice.
Last year.
Yeah.
At the Mercedes-Benz Arena. Sold out crowd. It was amazing. And we were just fortunate enough to have the front of house recording all those shows.
Right.
That we were able to, you know, get permission and use the recordings from that and do this release. So this just came out. It came out and released this end of January. Excuse me. Mid-January. And so it's out now. LiveFastDieLoud.com or BistoBlanco.com, or you can go to Rat Pack Records, which is our label. And
cool. They can pick up
the record.
Will not be disappointed.
No, I certainly
guys
hope
have
not.
Some good tunes for sure.
Thanks, bro.
Good tunes. So you guys got the live record out, and I haven't heard it yet, but I'm looking forward to hearing it. I've heard the sound quality's good on it and stuff. You know, sometimes you get those live records and they're like, eh.
Yeah, it's iPhone quality or
yeah, exactly.
Whatever. Yeah, no, we were fortunate. We were playing with a band called the Busa Uncles, and they're legends over there. Like, when I mean big, U2, huge. But just over there, you get them here to the States, they'll maybe draw two people. But over there, they sell out months in advance.
Yeah.
And when I mean sell out, it's huge. And we got invited to play with them. And so that's, it was a full production, man. It was something special.
That was the Uncles, right?
Yeah.
You guys toured with. Okay, cool. So anyway, backing up a little bit from here now, you know, was it 2013 I met you, I think? Or maybe it was 14.
Yeah, when we met at NAMM. Yeah, that was 2014.
Yeah. Yeah, through Chris Cardenas, a mutual friend. Well, became a mutual friend after I met you.
Yeah.
Which was kind of funny because I remember, that was my first NAMM show, and I remember meeting you, and Chris introduced me to you, talked to you for like 15 minutes, and you're like, yeah, give me a call, and then off you were gone, and I was like, shit, I didn't get his number. So I mean, we played that a little bit. You were on tour, and I was trying to get a hold of you and stuff. I thought, well, he gave me 15 minutes. I wish this guy would shut the fuck up.
No, it was.
It was good because we connected a few months later after you got back from tour and all that stuff, and came down here and. Oh, I came down here and met up with you.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning.
Yeah. You crashed on my couch. You knew me for 15 minutes, literally.
Yeah, exactly. Crashed on your couch. Still had the impressions from the last few guys who probably slept on there, too, I think. That was an old couch. You still have that couch?
No, that couch made its way to the curb, finally.
Good. Finally, huh? Is it still there?
Yeah. You know, here's a funny thing about that couch. I tried to like figure, I want to get rid of this couch, you know, I want to get rid of that old life. Had, you know, went through some shit, and so let's get rid of this and clean up. So I like to donate stuff, you know, people that's, you know, it's a sittable couch.
Yeah.
So I called up the donation company, I won't mention their name, but they looked at the couch and they're like, no, sorry.
Nobody wants to sit on that.
Nobody wants to sit on that. And you did. You slept on it.
I slept on it. I owned that couch for a while.
So it made its way to the city dump.
Oh, cool.
To rest its soul.
I'm glad it finally found its resting place.
Yeah, it's served its purpose.
So, what was really cool about that time, you know, getting to meet you and know you and all that stuff, when I came down, you know, and you're awesome, helped me out. I mean, not everything always works out the way you want it to work out, but you know, in the end, we got, you know, I got done what I wanted to get done.
Yeah.
But what I thought was cool, you called me up one day and said, "Hey, you want to go on tour with Bisto Blanco?" And so what made you have that decision?
I knew you'd work for free.
Yeah, well, I did work for free. Yeah, I didn't really know what I was doing, but...
you know, just so that the listeners know that, you know, since Dave and I have met, there was a connection of a friendship that right. that nurtured over those years. And anybody who's listened, Dave Libby is, man, he's the shit. You know, he's somebody that you can confide in, have fun with. You could be your absolute utmost self around with absolute no judgment, and is just one of the best buds you can ever have. So, having you on that trip, hoping to help promote what I feel I've, you know, I have tried to contribute what I can to Warrior Service. I was hoping that could help push it in some way, at least, you know, maybe bring some attention, even if it's one or two people that can plant the seed to get it to 5 or 10 more people, and and however way we can, you know, get the organization going, because it is something that is... you know, not only needed, but it's ran by somebody who's very sincere.
Right.
You
know? Yeah. Well, let's just try and take care of the vets.
Hey, you know, somebody has to.
Somebody,
right?
Exactly. Somebody's got to do it. Yeah. But yeah, no, it was cool because, you know, when you guys brought me on that tour, you know, I'd never done that kind of work before, so it was all new for me. And it was cool to be able to go do that, you know. I was nervous, obviously, especially when I was going to have to drive a bus or some motorhome or some crap. I was like, holy hell. But, yeah, it was cool because I got, you know, I didn't know that work. I didn't know that whole world and stuff. And it was cool to get in there. You guys gave me that opportunity to jump on board, go on tour with you guys, you know, slinging gear around and all that kind of good stuff. And then, you know, and then the additional coolness was you guys let me set up my own stuff too. You know, I got to sell my little Warrior Service shirts and put up my basically a little stand. You know, Chuck every now and then would mention Warrior Service at the shows and everything. And yeah, it was really cool. I mean, it just helped me understand more about the music world. And, you know, I think a lot of people, myself for sure, you know, you see you're on the receiving end of the work that's done, and you know, that's just the, I don't know, it's like the tip of the spear of everything else that goes on behind it to make that show happen. And you know, I've been to a lot of shows, and I was way more critical than I am now, because now I know all the work, and I'm like, okay, so when they screw up a little bit, I'm like, okay, you know, that's cool. Yeah, everything else going on, I can live with that.
Yeah, you might be thinking, God, how are we doing on merch tonight? Because we need gas money.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God, I'm supposed to play that A chord right there. Shit.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Gotta sell some more t-shirts, get some gas.
Right?
But no, it was a cool opportunity, and getting to know all you guys in the band and stuff, you know, it was cool, man. It was a cool trip, period, no matter what it was, whether we were going on a hunting trip or whatever. It was a good group of people, and we all just kind of gelled together and all that stuff, and it was a good experience for me. I had a great experience.
Yeah,
and
likewise.
You know, I don't ever want a tour, thanks to you.
You know, it can't
so
be,
I learned something.
It can't be any worse than being in, you know, in the trenches with other, you know, stinky assholes, right?
Well, that's true. That's true.
That's why I'm glad I only helped out with the last show, the one with the whiskey.
Yeah.
I didn't have to stay at night. I didn't have to.
Oh, no, trust me, Jeff. You're, you know, you're constantly thought of. I'm like, man, you know.
Yeah, you almost got to drum for you guys a couple of times. You guys had troubles getting your drummer over from Germany this time again.
Yes. Yeah, this is the second time, man, that he couldn't get into the country. So we had to bring in somebody who's, you know, played with us on the record, Sean Sellers, and man, he just, you know, came in fully prepared, the energy that we needed, and just knocked it out of the ballpark. You know, last year when we tried to do the same run, Tim got turned away right, you know, he flew to Chicago.
Yeah.
We all
Tim's the drummer.
Yeah. Tim Hsiung, yep. We all flew to Chicago and figured, okay, we'll get in the bus and we'll head to the first gig. Well, while we're waiting in Chicago, Tim is waiting in a little room being interrogated because he doesn't have the proper visas, you know. Yeah. So, you know, after about 6 hours of that, they just put him right back on an airplane straight to Germany. Yeah. We had a show the next day.
Right.
You can't cancel those shows.
You guys had a manager that knew how to play, right?
Our tour manager, yeah.
Talk about wearing more than one hat.
Huh? Oh, man. And Kenny just knocked it out of the park, man. What another just solid dude.
Yeah.
So we got to the first gig, which happened to be Kenny's place that he set this up in his bar at Rascals. And
that's in Chicago?
It's in Moline, Illinois.
Illinois.
And basically, he had to shut that bar down so we could rehearse there all day because we had to play a show. And, man, we did. At 4 a.m, like, Kenny, this is up to you now, dude. We're throwing this in your hands. Yeah. So, I mean, the poor guy did not sleep probably for a good 2 days or at all that night because he had to learn a record.
Right.
He had to learn our show, and our show's not an easy show to learn. We have all these little things going on, and, you know,
Well, your guys' show is a whole other experience. I mean, you can listen to the music, and you're like, yeah, they're good. Go see the show.
Right.
If you go see the show, then you'll see good. I mean, you guys are very entertaining. The music's good. The show, it's a show from start to finish. You rehearse this thing. It's not just up there grab-assing around. You guys got this rehearsed, and it's a good show. It's tight and entertaining. I love it.
We figure if people are going to come and see us for, you know, an hour, hour and a half, we want them to be able to get away from whatever they're whatever brought them there. Either it's because they just love music, they love the band, they want to see it, or maybe they're getting out just because they need just to get away.
Right.
And so we want people to be able to, you know, be part of that, and they are. They're part of that show.
Yeah. No, they're awesome shows. I knew I liked your guys' music after I got off that tour because I heard it so many times, and I still liked it.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, no, you guys, awesome show. If anybody out there listening gets a chance to see Bisto Blanco, hopefully they'll be doing some North American tours here in the near future. And
we're working on it right now. You know, a lot of our stuff is overseas, but we definitely want to get back here on our own soil and play around. It's just, you know, it's just trying to, you know, drum up the, you know, the money to keep it afloat over here. It's a bit tough. So, yeah, if anybody hears this, drop our name, find promoters, and say, I will promise to buy a ticket so they trust enough to pay the band enough money to get there.
There you go. Yeah, there's different ways to go to a show, and sometimes you got to help the band out a little bit, get there.
Yeah, it's expensive. I mean, God, that run that we did in the van, I mean, that was only 10 days, but, you know, I did the budget on that, and it was... And that wasn't 5-star at all, and you know that.
Yeah.
Sleeping
on your couch.
Yeah, that was, you know, close to almost $17,000 when you consider gas, food, a hotel to sleep in and wash, the van rental, trailer rental, gear, and feeding everybody. I mean, it's you know, it all adds up super fast.
Did we have a manager on that tour?
No.
Partial. In Alaska, you had a guy up there, Chris, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then, so, yeah, it's a lot of work. I mean, we've been talking about that even on other shows, just how much work is really involved.
Yeah, it's a lot of moving parts.
In doing something like this. I mean, just my experience of recording has, as you know, been a long, long road.
Yeah.
You know, because you've been there yourself.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't, it's not, you don't, I've said it before, you don't walk up, sing in the can, and get a dollar.
Nope.
It just doesn't work that way anymore.
Doesn't. It certainly doesn't. And, you know, there's a cost. And if you can find people to pull favors, then you're, you know, it obviously delays things even more because now you're on the free time, which means if someone's got to make money, they need to make money. And so I'll get to this after I do this gig. And that turns into the, you know, so as you know, it takes a while.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's just work, but which is why. The guys that are doing it now, and especially the ones been doing it for a while, it's not just the music or the chicks, ladies, whatever. It becomes a passion.
Yeah.
It becomes your life. And once it becomes your life, I mean, it really is. Especially for me, it's been it's a kind of a stress reliever. It's a lot of things, you know, mental health related stuff that you can just get up there, either get stuff out or escape, or, you know, whatever it is that, you know, or just have a good time. I mean, any reason you want to listen to music, you know, it's there. So, but you also do, you are also a sound engineer as well, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So going through the process of trying to be a rock star, let's just call it a working musician. I also, so I have, construction runs in my family. So I was working construction as well, and I was just burnt out on it, you know. Yeah. So I was, it turned out that I was up in Seattle recording with some friends, sitting in recording with some friends as a guitar player. And I was at London Bridge Studios, which if anybody's from the Seattle area knows about London Bridge and Rick Parisher, that guy is like the godfather of the whole grunge area era. I mean, bar none. Pearl Jam 10, Blind Melon, Alice in Chains. I mean, they were all there.
Yeah.
So during that week that I was recording there, I didn't leave. They all went back to the hotel, and I said, man, I'm sleeping right here on this couch. And I did. I slept in London Bridge for a week. I am not leaving here. I slept in the control room. And Rick was cool with it. He said, yeah, just don't put any drinks on the console. Don't fuck anything up. What's that?
Did he have a nice
couch?
It
was pretty beat up.
Yeah.
But,
but not like the couch at your house.
Not like the couch at my house. And that's legendary, bro. So I stayed there all week, and I'm like, you know what? As I'm, you know, learning and I'm winding 2-inch tape, I'm like, man, you know, this is kind of cool. I think I can do this for them. I can make records for until I become a rock star.
Yeah.
So I went to school, and I had basic concepts of recording, but I went to school and dove into more of the theory of signal flow and how things work. But of course, by that time, tape was on its way out.
Right.
And digital was already on its way in. It's back before any sound engineers out there know of, if they've been doing it long enough, Pro Tools was originally called Sound Designer 2, and that's where the whole Sound Designer 2 file format started. And it was just a two-track editor that people would run in. So that's
for
where
our listeners out there, they used to record music on tape, and it would be spun around a reel.
Yes,
so.
And that tape would run out after 15 minutes.
Well, there you go.
Okay, so check it out. So I get through the school, and I get my first gig, and I loved it. I was working. I found that I thought I'd make records, and I found out that I didn't like making records as much as I do like making sound for films and TV and movies. To this day I love it, man.
Yeah.
Something about, because I've always been a visual person, that putting sound to that just makes me giddy. I could do it all day long. So my first gig, I'm coming from the tape world. Okay, there's a lot of money going on, as we know, in recording. So when you got producers there, you've got actors, you've got the directors, you got a crew of people in your room, and I'm still used to tape. So I'm recording. I'm doing an ADR session, and I'm recording, and it keeps crashing every time I hit record. Jeff, you can probably relate to this. And I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, you don't see working parts on a computer. There's not. You don't see what's broken.
Right. You don't see the reel falling off the machine.
So I'm like, what the hell? So I'm gonna tell everybody, take five. Let me reboot. And I do this about 10 times now.
Yeah.
Take five. Just, take 30. Let me figure what's how going on. So I ended up having to call the studio owner, and he comes in. He looks at the hard drive, and it only had like 4 megabytes left on it. And I'm like, oh, hard drives run out of space just like a tape. But you see the tape.
Yeah.
So anyway, he plugs in the hard drive. It's fixed in, a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
And 2 hours have gone by now. And so what I liked is that I start up the session again, and I have everybody in there. And he comes up behind me while I'm recording, and he whispers in my ear, and he says, "You just cost me $5,000. Oh. And I was like, well,
ooh.
I thought that was going to be my last day. I truly thought that was my last day. No, he kept me on, man. But he broke me in like a wild stallion, man.
Yeah.
He taught me the ropes. It was, and plus the other crew I had there, a mentor who's still a good friend of mine today, a film mixer who does great work around.
Paycheck was an IOU?
It might as well be. He still paid me, man, but I didn't make that mistake anymore. Yeah, I'll tell you that.
All right on. Then you also have a plumbing company as well, correct?
Yes. Yeah. My folks retired a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And, they built a plumbing company, of course, all through my childhood. And when they retired, my pops was just going to let it go.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, man, I've known most of these customers since I've been, you know, a teenager. But there's, you know, that's a good business, man. Yeah. So I was like, well, no, let me take it over, you know, let me keep the name going and keep the company going. And so, you know, that's one of the other hats I wear, you know, keep the music flowing. Of course, music is always my number one, and that's always what makes me happiest. Yeah. Working on in the studio, I love it. And I, you know, actually not minding construction so much anymore either, because it's, you know, it allows me to do other things.
Right.
And make my own time, my own schedule.
Lane. Per se,
exactly,
doing plus, the same thing.
The clientele that you know, that's been built, they're not just clientele. It's they're kind of family members as well. You know, they've been around a while, and even the new clients. You know, it's I'm like that bastard runaway kid who comes knocking on the door and that never leaves. The stray cat, you feed me, and you know you're not getting rid of me.
Don't feed the cat because they'll be back.
That's right. You know, I'm taking care of you, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, right on. So, what would you say to our listeners out there? You know, any aspiring musicians or artists or whatever? What would you tell them as far as advice?
Well, just.
There's
a lot of advice, but I'd say, you know, you can always hear the generic, don't give up on your dreams, but it really has to, it says a lot because, you know, out of all the groups of musicians that I have met over my years, I've only met, I'd say maybe a handful, five or so, that were the laziest motherfucker. The rest of them, I'm going to tell you, they're the hardest working people I know. And there's a reason for that, because this business... Mm-hmm. You have to work your ass off for nothing most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to want to do it.
Yeah.
And you have to make your way for it. And so to keep that dream alive, you know, you have to do what you got to do to make it, you know, outside of being, you know, doing things that are not moral or whatever, that are just not right. But that's usually not the case. But you just have to work hard, as you know. I mean, you saw that tour.
Yeah.
I made no money on that tour.
Yeah.
Spent a lot of money, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. But, well, it's you got to spend it to get the name out, and you got to do the shows so people know who you are, and then the show's got to be good.
Yeah.
Because no one's going to pick up the record if it ain't.
Right, but I'll tell you what, I was the richest poor man out there, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
I was so happy, and and that doesn't have to always necessarily be the outcome of being a musician by any means. Advice, just work your ass off.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
Constantly learn. Listen to people. Listen to other, you know, get inspired by other musicians.
Right.
Listen to people in the business who are the business side of things, because that's usually how you're going to find out how to get your paycheck. You know?
Right.
So if you have a good product, you need to know how to sell it and maintain it.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's not... I mean, I was not in the music biz back in the 80s and 90s or whatever, but it's not... like it used to be. You know, we can get a record deal or whatever, and then, you know, the money starts coming, and then you would tour. Now you have to get a record deal or get a record done and then tour it and hope your show's good enough to get people to buy your record. Isn't that correct?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not
so
like,
it's
yeah,
bass
it's not like
backwards
that.
To what it used to be. And then when I was talking to Jeff earlier about how, you know, it's kind of a fast food society, you know, it's like stuff's so available that, I don't know. Yeah, I guess I just remember when I was a kid, I'd go buy a CD or tape. Not 8-track. I'm not that old. But you go buy that tape and you'd take it home and you'd listen to it from start to finish with the fold out completely out, reading every lyric, reading who's this and that. You know, you got to study it and take it all in. And, you know, I remember listening to records that I didn't really care for at first, and you'd have to listen to them a couple of times. And you'd be like, oh, shit, this is awesome. And that's not to say you just got to listen to it till you like it, but I'm just saying there's just stuff in there, you know, you just got to slow yourself down. I think these days people don't slow down a lot long enough to appreciate what it is, especially in the music.
Well, it's true. I mean, if you don't grab somebody, I was reading a article the other day, and it was really interesting because it's so true, and I am so guilty of this. Okay, so my patience... of waiting on something has really diminished with the way technology has advanced. You know, if something doesn't upload on my phone within 5 seconds, next.
Yeah.
I don't have time really five 10 more seconds to wait for something. But it's true. Yeah. So, you know, multiply that by the 100 million people that are in this country around and go around the world that way.
Yeah.
So if you don't have what they're talking about with the song, if you're not, if you haven't hit your first hook by 15 seconds in, people are already off. Their attention span is lost. So usually by 30 seconds, you have to hit two or three hooks in a song. And it's so true.
Yeah.
Think about like it's like with the whole Spotify thing. You don't like something, you just
next
vote it down, next. They won't show you that band again. Yeah. It just like, oh, okay, they don't like it. And then guess what? They don't remember your name. They don't remember the song. They don't remember what you sound like because they don't care.
Right. And it could have been just that one song
they made. Right, exactly.
That attached to them, you know?
Yeah, and it could just be your taste, you know, you just didn't like. They tried something different, but I mean, it's all reasons why and all, I guess, all that stuff. But, you know, you guys are a great band. Again, listeners out there, ever get a chance to see Beast Oblanco, go check them out. But in the meantime, before you do get to see them, go get their record. I can't pick my favorite one, because I haven't heard the third one yet, and two, because all the songs are good. There's any Beast of thing with Beast Oblanco on it, you're gonna like it.
No, thanks, brother.
So it's all good. Jeff, you got any questions for our friend Chris here?
Did you guys talk about how meeting here at the studio? And
yes, no, we haven't talked. We haven't talked about that.
No, because so, I mean, we all. Chris. I met you here.
You met Dave.
Yeah,
through me.
Because I was because I was supervising the session.
Yeah.
That where you guys were working on stuff together with Byron and all of them, like. No, that's, I mean, yeah, and then even from that, and that's when we started hanging out and everything else. So.
Yeah, when, after, you know, fast forward a year of Dave and I meeting, talking to the listeners here, we're trying to build a team to help him get some songs and stuff written for SOSRA, which is going to, you know, for warriorservice.org, and to help benefit that and get, you know, get it out in some medium to get the name out for Warrior Service. So Dave has a book, and that's not just one book, but a book of just incredible lyrics and poems. Thanks. That was for his that was basically getting all the stuff in hell that he's gone through, and probably good times as well, but out of his head and on paper. But I wanted to do some songs, so that's when you came to me and said, hey man, I need help.
I think when I first came to you with all that, I think you thought I could sing too.
Sorry, I had to have a good laugh on that one.
Cricket. Anyway.
No comment.
No, I just going to the studio, another studio, and I think you guys had higher expectations. I mean, I could write.
Yeah.
So maybe he can sing too. But anyway, it's been a work in progress.
Well, we found out that, you know, the style that we were writing wasn't working with what
your voice. It wasn't conducive to what I was able to do, especially at that time. Because
you can sing.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, thanks.
And through that, coming to the studio and you know, through some other connections that we had, lined us up here with Jason. And this is how we met Jeff. And I just remember the day walking in, Jeff, you and I kind of hit it off because we are engineers.
Oh, yeah.
And so we just sit next to each other and we're just, new gear, right? We love gear.
Yeah, you guys had your nerd moment.
How do you set up your sandwich chain? What do you
Exactly, you know? But I had a connection with this guy, and I just knew there's some talent. I got to tell you, the most engineers, man, they're talented motherfuckers because just because they're behind the board and they're not saying anything, and they
know how to happen.
They know a good engineer will just shut up and let the other people dictate what's going to happen, but they'll drive the session, right?
Right.
But you don't realize that, hey, he may be a brilliant guitar player.
Right.
And look, the guy plays every freaking instrument, right?
Oh, I know.
Right? And so just when we were listening to all those songs with Sonny and who's the other dude?
Byron.
Byron, but
Tommy.
I mean Tommy, those songs that, you know, that Byron and I put together. That's when we were finding out that maybe this wasn't the style.
Right.
You need to go with what you want to do. You need to rock. And
so we started the Backstreet Boy thing, right?
We started Backstreet Boy, and that's when I said, hey, Jeff. No, but that was, I was like, you know, let's bring in Jeff here, because I'm sure he's got some great ideas. And sure enough, look, you guys have got, you're working on record number 2.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Thanks. Technically number three, I guess. Well, if you count the EP demo. Doesn't count. No, that's just, no, yeah. I'm counting it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so record number 2.5.
There you go.
2.5. There you go.
2.5.
And so the funny thing about it is, going into one of the songs that we wrote up at his place is very, to me, is very inspired by Bisto. Like, 100%, like the intro and the whole thing. Like, when I was listening to just a bunch of songs, I'm like, how would Chris write this riff? How would Tim play these parts? Things like that. And I'm just like, wow, it's like a full fucking circle of just coming back and forth between everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the guy's a wealth of talent.
Yeah.
And well, we were never known if you would ask one question, what do you think?
Exactly.
You never know.
Yep. Yeah. If you let you let the quiet guy be quiet, you're not going to know who he is.
Well, that's the engineer's job. Yeah, their job is not to speak up.
Right.
No, you don't talk. We're there to push buttons and make it sound good. That's it.
The most I was taught to talk is like, hey, I need a safety for tech.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
So unless you, you know, speak up and ask the question.
Right, you're
not
going to
know because we won't talk. That's not our job, man. You know, you step on a producer's toes. You know how hard that hammer comes down. Yeah. So,
That's cool.
And lo and behold, you know.
Yeah, you know, and that. I mean, I don't know that we. I we used maybe one song, I think, from that group.
It was Biotic Plague, which became Bring 'Em Down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we used, and of course, changed a little style and stuff like that to it a little bit. But it was a cool experience for me because, you know, for a guy that's never stood in front of a microphone to come into a real studio and start doing his thing and
it's intimidating,
not being very good at it and knowing that you're not good at it.
Yeah.
It was a good experience for me. Yeah. I mean, it's scary as hell, but it's a good experience. And, you know, thank God for Jeff. You know, we mentioned that on the other show, you know, but, and you too. I mean, if it weren't for you coming to pick me up at the airport, I wasn't even sure if you're going to pick me up. Be honest with you, because I met you for 15 minutes, dude. I was like, God, I hope this guy gets me. I was like, well, I wonder what he looks like. Well, I forget.
You know, I just, you know, when we spoke at NAMM, it was, for the longest time, you know, this, you know, I got to say again, going back to the advice to people, you know, the music business can be very hard and it can just make you very jaded and where you just don't want to, you just don't want to do it anymore. I haven't been that way, but I've been like exhausted.
Right.
And it was nice to try to do, you know, to jump on board to do something to help people and, helping our vets and helping, you know, what you want to do.
Right.
And help our vets, man. Help these are our people, man.
Yeah.
That was inspiring to me. It was really inspiring. I was like, okay, there's no way to say no to this because this is cool. Finally, there's like life in music, you know, something that it can shoot it for.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like I was almost a military brat.
Yeah,
so to speak, because being in, you know, in Anchorage, you know, we have Fort Rich and we have Elmendorf right there. Well, 80% of my friends were in their parents were in the military, so I lived on those bases practically, spending the night hanging out with my buddies.
Yeah,
so just to know, you know, and be enlightened to what was not being done to help you guys afterwards, and during.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody really knows unless they actually talk to somebody in full length and actually get to know somebody so they don't think they're just, oh, they're just bitching because they're not. No, that's not the case.
Well, I mean,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, it's a, you know, you hear it on the media, you hear it on the news and, you know, all that stuff. And thing is, your neighbors, your friends, your relatives, you know, there's veterans are out there and, you know, I mean, thank you for your service is cool, but, you know, like you and Jeff and everybody has done for me, which has never really been for me. It's been so that I can take it and carry it on to the vets.
Absolutely.
You know, I was just a vehicle for that. And even with the music that we're doing and you know, talking to you now and all that, you know, I just want to share my experience with vets and stuff so they can one see, hey, you know, that guy did it and he couldn't sing a tune and now look at him, you know, there's just so many things that you can do. And I just, instead of telling people what they can do, I'm trying to be that example of of what they can do, you know, and that way, if they say, well, I can't do that, I'm like, well, I can't either, but I did it. So here I am.
Yeah, right.
But it absolutely. And that's kind of the, you know, the part of the point of this whole show is to let people out there listening know that there's people out there like yourself and like Jeff and, you know, that want to help. You know, maybe you're not rolling in the cash or anything, but like even with the music industry, we all know it ain't all about the money because there's not much there right. unless you're established. But so you have to, you know, you got to have that passion and stuff. And that's what I like about the people that I've met on this journey is just the passion to help vets. You know, they maybe know an Uncle Joe or something didn't, you know, wasn't doing so well or whatever. And so, yeah, my hat's off to you guys for helping, you know, make all this happen. It's really cool.
Well,
really cool.
Likewise. Right. Likewise on. To all of you guys, you know.
Well, Chris, it's been awesome. I'm glad you came in. Don't forget to check out Bisto Blanco. What are you, Bisto Blanco? What's your website?
BistoBlanco.com.
Bisto Blanco. There you can. BistoBlanco.com.
Yeah. Don't forget to check out warriorservice.org.
Oh, there you go. There's another great website. All right. Well, hey, thanks.
And then everybody check out Jeff's Facebook page. He looks really good in a mankini.
Yes, or a moo-moo.
Actually, real quick before we hang up, you know, I got to tell you how blown away by this guy. So after you went and saw Moana, right, he's all into this whole playing ukulele thing. I'm like, you son of a bitch. He's playing, and he's playing it really well, and he's just been playing like a day.
Yeah, now, actually, I think, was it the first ukulele you got from my buddy Steven up in Washington?
Yeah.
Yeah, so then all of a sudden there's it's him just like him messing around. And then there's this full-blown video of him in the studio singing soundtrack, playing ukulele. I'm like, that motherfucker.
And it's really good.
And it's good.
It's not like just Jeff doing it.
No,
it's really
like,
good.
Bitch, the guy's got more talent in his damn than I, you know, than I do my whole body.
I know, it's you know, disgusting.
The funniest, the funniest thing I brought up. Some of my friends were singing the "How Far I'll Go." From Moana, and they're just like, oh, I hadn't heard they have the pop version and they have the movie version. So I'm like, oh, I'll bring up the pop version. And I just...
And you did that metal version, which was brilliant.
It's literally, I just went on YouTube right now on my computer and I put in "How Far I'll Go" and it's the third thing right underneath, like, both the normal versions. I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he's all giddy right now.
Just like, wow, it's the official ones than me.
So you might have to get back on Facebook then.
I don't like Facebook.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Nobody does, but you have to.
No. I have Instagram for my music friends and puppies.
There you go.
Jeff likes puppies.
I like puppies.
Well, hey, I just want to thank everybody for listening. And like I said, this is Chris Latham, Bisto Blanco. More importantly, good friend. So thanks for coming, and look forward to hearing some more Bisto Blanco.
Amen.
Roger out. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
DV Radio.